All right. In honor of our Challengers review this week, Nick and I have come prepared with four balls and two rackets. Let's get into it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a brand new episode of Two Peas on a Podcast, where we review the latest and sometimes greatest movies every week. Your host, Gerald, here with you, and your co-host on the other side is about to serve me with one of his furry green balls, but I am prepared to... I don't know, I'm done. What's up, Nick? How are you, buddy?
What is wrong with you?
I don't know, man. There's a lot of balls flying around.
He sees an erotic movie with Zendaya, and his head, I'm telling you, it's been even before the episode proper. It's been, you should have seen the message that was in the chat when I logged in here. It just, Zendaya. Scary stuff. Something about playing with a racket. I don't know.
Zendaya. The review this week is for Challengers. Luca Guadagnino's new kind of, I don't know, sexy drama sports movie that we're going to discuss for the review proper when we get into it. Nick, I want to make a quick announcement up here at the top of the show. I kind of teased it last week. You know, you and I got together and we talked about Rise of the Planet of the Apes last week.
I'm out of here. That's it. I spoiled it for you guys. I ruined the surprise.
What?
I'm really not.
You better not be. One of the roulette picks we did last week, and I kind of teased it a little bit at the end of that episode, but we are going to be incorporating a movie draft episode once a month starting in May. We have a special guest that we're going to have join us for the very, very first one, the inaugural. I'm not quite sure what the topic is going to be yet. Nick and I, you and I can discuss that at the end of this episode and lock it down because we're going to record that in about a week or so. So we'll come up with a topic for our special guest, and we will draft movies, something that you and I both have really missed doing ever since our boy Justin Winters kind of folded his podcast. I've heard other shows do it, and it's fun to listen to, but I haven't had myself haven't had a chance to do it in quite a while. I know you're in the same boat, so I'm looking forward to adding that to the Two Peas roster. And that'll be in rotation starting in May. Nick, I know you're pumped about that too, yeah?
I honestly can't wait. I famously draft terribly. No one has the same movie taste I do. And I always pick the wildest, weirdest, off-the-wall stuff. So yeah. I'm excited to get back into that territory. They were always the most fun, right? You get like four people on the mic all at the same time, just trading barbs back and forth about the picks and, you know, giving each other crap and having a great time. Always the most fun. Always the most fun. And one thing that I've really missed about, I mean, we do the show every week and I love doing the show with you and all that kind of stuff. But I miss that collaborative, like, or another rando shows up, you know, just other random voices coming in and just bouncing off of each other. Because I think it keeps conversations fresh when you have, when you have more people come in like that. We need to get like 12 people all at the same time and then make Dan edit it and see if we can make them go crazy.
Just for Dan's sake. Yeah.
I heard him yell. Wait, what was that? I just heard Dan yell from here, I think.
So you're a draft with your heart kind of guy for sure. And always. I know that about you.
Always. Yeah. 100%. I do not. I will say this from the outset, and I will say it every time we do one. I do not play to win. I play to have fun, and I play just to be me. I play to just be myself. Some people play, and they're like, oh, my God, I've got to pick the picks that I'm going to win. Like, I don't care. I don't care if I win or not. It does not matter to me. It doesn't mean anything to me.
I'm going to add a little kind of like extra layer when we do the movie drafts here.
Wait, do I get a cash prize? Because if so, we could throw that whole I don't want to win thing right out the door.
Maybe. Maybe a tennis racket. We'll see. Ball's optional. Hang tight. So I don't know if this might be a bit of a surprise to you, but I put it in our little Google Doc that you and I share together, but we're going to have categories as we go through the rounds to make it a little more interesting and a little more layered and have a little more strategy when you draft too. So it'll be fun. As I'm looking at the spreadsheet real quick, Nick, because I don't know if you have it there, but it's going to be, you're going to get a pick from the genre of comedy, action, horror, thriller, or sci-fi, blockbuster, which would be any movie that made over $100 million domestically, any movie that won an Oscar, it doesn't matter what Oscar it was. It could have been for song. It could have been for picture. It could have been for wardrobes. It doesn't matter. And then drama. So there'll be six categories.
So it'll have to be a sub, like, depending on whatever the topic it is, your picks will have to fall into a subcategory. Is that what you're telling me?
Right. So you'll get six picks. Like, you'll have a team of six movies. But if you decide to, you know, if we did movies from this year, for example, and you decided to draft challengers, then you could put that in a drama category, probably, I would say, right? Safely. And you could maybe make an argument for it to be like in a thriller category. So you would have to be sure, you would have to have, but then your drama pick would be off the board. Do you see what I'm saying? So that would be your drama.
Okay.
So then you have five more categories.
You can't just go to the well over and over for different types of, okay.
Right. So again, we'll let everyone know what the first draft topic is, and we'll get some suggestions like we normally do for one big question from folks for some of their favorite movies and whatever that initial subject will be. And then we're going to look to our patrons and followers to come up with some ideas for us. And they've already been throwing some over on Patreon, Nick, of some different categories that we could do. Some of them are breaking our balls a little bit, but there's some real ones in there too. So we'll dig in there and draw one out of the hat, and we'll start coming up with some good drafts.
Best A24 movie. Somebody already said A24 movies, right?
I mean, we're doing that for sure. I mean, we're definitely going to do that. We have
to do that. Best Mia Goth performances.
Because Maxine comes out this year, so we have to do that. All right. So more to come on that. Movie drafts are going to be part of 2P's in the future starting in May, and we'll have a special guest to help us get that kicked off.
Love it.
So stay tuned. Stay tuned for all those details. Nick, as I said, the review this week is for challengers. But before we get there, we do like to start out by seeing what the fans had to ask us over online and what we call one big question.
You got to ask yourself a question.
I have a lot of questions. Number one, how dare you?
All right, Nick. So I figured I would start us out this week because I'm looking at the questions that we got over on the Facebook fan page. And our boy, Jared Taylor, who comes through every week. Jared, we love you, brother, patron of the show. He had a good one here. And obviously, this is inspired by challengers. But he says, what is the sexiest sport in the world? Nick, I'm going to throw it to you first.
Sexiest sport in the world. There's obviously like the really like mannish answers you could give of like ladies Jello wrestling or something like that, which would just seem strange.
I didn't think you were going there.
The sexiest sport? I'm just going to say ice hockey for Dan. Just for Dan's sake, ice hockey. Just throwing your weight into somebody else at full speed into those boards. Just that collision of flesh on flesh. See, you're thinking about it now. You're playing with sticks. Well, you keep whacking things around with your stick.
All right, calm down. through the male gaze, it would probably be like volleyball, like beach volleyball. Oiled up dudes shirtless and chicks in bikinis. Like, I mean, come on.
It ain't even about bikinis. Okay. I'm sorry. I got to give the man answer here, but, volleyball shorts are, the greatest article of clothing ever invented. I'm sorry. They are.
Yeah. I'm thinking like beach volleyball is probably the way to go. I mean, beach wrestling is pretty sexy too, though. I mean, half naked dudes and or ladies kind of embracing in the squared circle.
I do love my mommy.
Yeah. So I don't know. Some good ones. What do you have over on the Discord chat there? Any good questions for us this week, Nick?
I've got a question. Big GG money from Jason Nerdrovert said, what comes to mind first when you think of movies that you might have enjoyed but are easily forgettable? It's a tough question because Yaney already gave the correct answer, which is none, because they were forgotten. Like, Yaney already gave the correct smart ass answer, but I mean, true to a degree, because if it's forgettable, then you're not really going to remember a whole lot about it. I'm going to say, as a broad answer, things I rate like a 6 or a 7, like movies that I pass, but not like enthusiastically pass, you know, like anything that falls into that. 7's a pretty good score. I only have four passing grades, Gerald. Wait, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So that's 5. But yeah, 7's like my second lowest passing grade. So to me, a 7's like, it's pretty good, but you know, I'm probably not ever going to watch it again.
My math skills are rubbing off on you, I can see, by the way.
Wow. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's 5, Gerald.
Yeah, nailed it. The first thing that comes to mind for me is the new Roadhouse, because I did really like that movie and I did think it was good, but I have kind of forgotten about it until I was just sitting here trying to think of an answer for that question, which is kind of weird because we just saw it, what, like a month and
I'm
a half
sorry,
ago?
I'm sorry, I want to reread the question to you and make sure you understood it. It said movies that you might have enjoyed.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing enjoyable about that colonoscopy.
I really enjoyed it. I mean, you gave it a 1, I think, or 2 or something.
I gave it a 1, and it was lucky to get that. It got a 1 because I can't rate it nothing.
Wow. All right. Well,
the key grip worked really hard on that one. So I wanted to recognize the key grip's work there.
Interesting choice for your scoring system there. All right. Thanks for the questions, guys. As always, one big question. If you want to get involved, check the show notes and join up to our various outlets on social media. And you can drop some questions to us to shout out on the show each and every week. Nick, we are going to be getting into Luca Guadagnino's new film, Challengers, starring the lovely Zendaya, which we've already talked about this year from Dune Part 2, which, if you're keeping score at home, is my number one film of the year thus far. All right, so just
don't
remember
make me
that.
Have going to in. Crap on Dune Part 2 again for another episode.
What we like to do, guys, before we start discussing the film, is we give our score out of 10 up top to each other. We reveal that to each other. We have not talked about it yet. It's what we like to call the early score reveal.
Damn it, this always happens. I think I'm going to score, and then I never score. It's not fair.
My early score reveal for Dune Part 2 is that I've subtracted yet another point from the score. It's now at like -4 out of 10.
Every time I mention it, you just take a point off.
Every time Gerald brings it up, my score just lowers again.
Hey, maybe it will circle back around at some point and come back around and start collecting points again.
No, it definitely will not.
It'll just stay in the negative, I guess. That's a bummer. All right, count us in, man. Here we go. Our score out of 10 for Challengers. What do we got?
All right, fine. 3, 2, 1. Booyah. Hey! Oh, come on. This was lame.
Two weeks in a row? We could have rolled the clip from Rise of the Planet of the Apes. We both gave that one an 8
Hang on. Let me put, there you go. It's just a 3 now. It's just a 3.
You changed it. Let's tell everyone. So it's an 8 from me and also an 8 from Nick, which
another 8 from me. Sorry, Brad. Brad wanted me to hate this.
Which is an 8 from the P's altogether on Challengers. Nick, I just had that spreadsheet open a minute ago. That might be your highest rated now. Right? Of this year.
That is my highest rated film of this year so far, yes.
Yeah, I think because Civil War would have been in there somewhere, but I think you gave that a 7.
Gave that a 7, yeah. So gave Mean Girls a 7. Gave Love Lies Bleeding a 7. So, yeah, this is my top film of 2024 to date.
I want to hear what you have to say about it. I was worried going into this discussion with you because I'm biased. I'm a bit of a fanboy of Lucas films. Like, I've loved all of them. I know you probably didn't see it, but he did a Suspiria remake that I thought was really, really good. Call Me By Your Name was infamously in my top 5 movies of the decade, last decade, when I did that episode with Paul several years ago. And I just love this guy's style, and I love how all of his movies are so different. Like, they all have kind of like similar thematic elements to them, but like they're just shot so differently. Like, they're, you know, he's got one horror movie, he's got this one really like quiet Italian countryside romance, and then he's got this just like sports movie that's really energetic and frantic. And I mean, we're obviously going to talk about specifics with Challengers when we get into our spoiler portion of the review, but I love not only this movie, but how it speaks to Luca's kind of filmography thus far and how it's another layer to his style. I mean, it's just another kind of like Infinity Stone that he's collecting in his glove. It's just a different kind of movie for him, and I thought he still did a really, really good job. And then the performances were all just, in my opinion, incredible. The score is unbelievable. Like, I can't wait to just like listen to this score over and over again when I'm on a road trip or whatever. I mean, Atticus Ross and Trent Reznor never miss, in my opinion, and this is another banger. What did you think, man? Generally, we'll let everybody know when we get into spoilers.
It's interesting when you talk about the way that the film is shot, because I definitely have some issues with the way the film was shot in a couple of different ways. We'll talk about it as we get a little bit deeper into the review. But I mean, overall, it's a movie about tennis, like something that I never like ever. Like, you look at it from the outside looking in, you just say it's a tennis movie starring Zendaya. And two people I've never heard of, Mike Face, Josh O'Connor. I've never heard of them before. I have no idea who they are. So I don't know if they've been in anything or, you know, whatever else. But you look at it from the outside and you're just like, this does not speak to me at all. Like, so I went into this and like, make no mistake, like anybody who's listened to reviews on this show this year, I've not had the best 2024 in film. So I've been getting a little bit cynical about film. In this year, I'm waiting for that one that's really going to sneak up on me and surprise me. And this film definitely does. You're absolutely right. Reznor and Ross's score, absolutely. It sucks you into this film and it really, really makes it just incredibly exciting all throughout the runtime. I swear, even if you're not somebody who gives a crap about tennis, you don't need to right. enjoy this film or to really, really get into it, because it's about so, so much more than that. Tennis is really just kind of the backdrop for, you know, it's you could, here's to be fair, and you could replace tennis in this movie with any other sport, yeah. correct? Like, yeah. do you agree with that?
I do.
I think you could really replace tennis with any other thing. So the tennis isn't like, you don't have to know anything about tennis no. to necessarily really, really enjoy this film. But I mean, I talk in the past few reviews that we've done about characters in films that are not drawn well enough. These are characters that are so richly drawn on the page and then so richly performed.
Yeah.
They stick with you when you leave that theater. You're constantly thinking about the different decisions and the different actions of these different characters all throughout the course of this film. And I love characters like that just hang with you, that just stay with you when you leave the cinema. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about some of the different things that happen in this movie, but yeah. it's a sexy ass movie.
Yeah, it is. You mentioned the tennis aspect of it, which is exciting. And there's some cool scenes there with the different tennis matches and things that happen on the tennis court. But I do think that, and I think this is similar to what you were saying, but I think that the tennis itself is really just a vehicle to kind of relay the overall story. This whole thing is kind of a game between these three people. And it kind of plays like that over a couple decades in this movie, right? I feel like 15 years or something like that, over the course of
15 years, give or take. Yeah.
Yeah. Over the course of this film. So,
yeah.
And we'll get into who's playing the game and who's winning the game and that kind of thing. But I think that is what the tennis is supposed to illustrate for like a real life kind of like depiction for us, like, oh, we can understand people competing in a tennis match, you know, that makes sense. But maybe what some of these characters are doing over the course of that 15 years is obviously a much deeper type of game and a lot higher stakes, because it's their lives and lives of people around them and whatever.
A lot of it's meant to really convey the emotion of the moment. And,
yeah.
you know, it's a lot of it's really meant to be a little bit more introspective in terms of what these characters might be thinking or feeling at the same time. You know, it, instead of spelling it out, it really, really uses the tennis as the vehicle to kind of convey some of that emotionality. Instead of right. having the characters have big dramatic blow ups with each other, it's the way that they're hitting the ball and it's the way that the shot is tracking the ball. Even though that doesn't work in every case, there's some baffling shot choices, especially in the later part of the movie, because I really feel like Luca just got to a point where he was just like, man, I've shot tennis every possible way I could shoot tennis. Right. So let's try to do something different with it. And it doesn't work, in my opinion.
Right.
But we'll talk more about
that. Yeah, there was a couple unique angles for sure that kind of took me out of it for a split second. I mean, it didn't ruin the movie for me, obviously, but it did kind of take me out for a minute.
It definitely didn't ruin the movie, but it definitely didn't add to it.
What is he doing that?
It was just like, can we not, please? Yeah.
So we'll get into that and a lot of other things after the promo break, Nick. When we come back, guys, we will be into spoilers for Challengers. We both loved it. We will tell you why we loved it. We'll tell you what problems we have with it as well. So we will do a full spoiler review for Challengers on the other side of this break. We will be right back.
Two Peas on a Podcast is made possible by our executive producers, Dan Brennick, Caleb Brownlee, Daniel Henderson, Michelle Dodo, Paul Prezula, Chris Yeaney, Julio Oliveira, Drew Hallam, Dan Roski, Jared Taylor, Michael Hill, Jason, David Powell, Joey Austin, Imran Javed, Kayla McCoy, Rebecca Lurch, Brett Parker, Justin Winters, Heidi England, and Brad Hargis. If you'd like access to bonus reviews, the ability to submit roulette wheel picks, and a litany of backlog content such as bonus top 10s, G-tunes, and My First Time, please consider going to patreon.com/twopeasonapod and contribute just as little as $1 to have access to everything.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. We are going to be going into a full discussion on Challengers. It'll be a freestyle conversation where we will be talking about everything that we liked and saw in the movie, different scenes and plot beats and whatever. So there will be spoilers. If you have not seen it, please come back to this portion of the review after you get a chance to check out Challengers. Nick, I want to start our spoiler discussion by asking you point blank, in your opinion, is this a sports movie?
No. Sports is just the backdrop. Sports is the setting.
So if we were doing our classic top five format and we were doing top five sports movies, this wouldn't even be in consideration for you.
I mean, to jump into the very end of the movie, like the whole movie is predicated on it's this match between Art and Patrick, mm-hmm. who used to be doubles when they Champions. Were in college, I guess. They used to be like doubles, you know, a team together, and they were really, really great. And then Art goes his way and becomes like a super tennis pro, while Patrick basically looks like he's homeless most of the time.
Yeah.
And so, and they end up in this tournament against each other years, 13 years later. I'm pretty sure it is exactly.
I think so, yeah.
And, you know, like, the whole thing is about them in the finals of this match and the reasons why both of them need to win it. All the other forces that are circling around them as everything happens. But you don't even find out who wins that match at the end.
Yeah, it is a little ambiguous. You're right.
It's left pretty ambiguous at the ending, at the end of the movie, as to who actually won the match. Because I think by the time you get to that point, it's not important who wins it. That's what I think.
Because the only reason I'm asking you who you think won is because you're right. But just until you just said that, I, in my mind, thought Art won that match.
Why?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Because I'm sitting here, I'm computing it in my mind and kind of reliving it as you're saying. And I'm like, I guess they don't really tell us. But I did think that he spiked it at the end there and they embraced, you know. But you're right. You don't see the ball hit the, you know what I mean? You don't even know if it was in bounds, I mean, necessarily. So that's interesting to take away. Did you have who you think the victor was, or you never thought about
it? No. Okay. No, I never thought about it. And I'm glad that it doesn't definitively, like, it could have ended with a very clear definitive, like the ball hits and, you know, Art is like running around and he's like cheering and pumping his fists.
Right.
Patrick
right.
is running around. It could have ended with that definitive kind of scene, and it doesn't on purpose.
And I like that too.
I feel like, and I feel like this is one of those movies where that ambiguity is everything. Like, you can rewrite this movie. The thing I find the most fascinating about movies like this and in characters like this is try to climb, if you will, into these characters' heads for a few minutes and think of everything that must be going on inside of their minds, all the different stuff, like even just all the things they've been through with each other. And I mean, come on, dude. I mean, these are so well realized and developed characters.
Yeah. What I want to say, one of the like kind of ticks I take off for the movie overall is Tashi's kind of portrayal in the last act of the movie, because after seeing the movie from beginning to end, my interpretation is that really the narrative of the film leans a little more towards Art and Patrick's relationship, and their, because they have that, I guess, cute story about how they've known each other since grade school. They taught each other how to jerk off and at age 12 or whatever, and So they've known each other essentially their whole lives, and they've also grown in tennis together. Yeah. And college, became pros together, played, you know what I mean? So they've literally been each other's right-hand man their whole life. And then Tashi, Zendaya, comes into the picture, and she almost, especially like in the trailers and stuff, was portrayed like as this kind of puppeteer, like puppet master. And they're her two little, you know, white boys that she's kind of controlling or whatever, which, I mean, I buy it as Zendaya. But I thought it was interesting after seeing the movie, and then I want to hear if you get what I'm saying or if you saw this too. But after seeing the movie, she was not as prominent as I was expecting in the overall narrative of the story. I thought from the three main characters, we got a lot more about Art and Patrick and their connection and how their constant seeking approval of Tashi and wanting, you know, their desire for her is really what drove them from the moment they met her until the end of the film. And it was always kind of about the game. You know, I mean, there was a moment in the movie when Tashi told, because, you know, they both wanted to get with her, and she said, whoever wins the match, I'll give you my number, right? Yep. So the scene before that, Patrick was saying he was going to let Art win for the purposes of his tennis future and stuff like that. And as soon as he heard that, they both played their hearts out, and, you know, Patrick ended up winning and ended up getting her number, and they ended up dating for a period of time after that.
Yeah.
And then fast forward to much later in the film when Tashi approaches Patrick and she says, you know, look, I want you to lose this match tomorrow. Art needs this. Like, he's got a career, you know, he needs a grand slam, like whatever, whatever. So she was kind of orchestrating a lot of stuff, I felt like, but I don't know if that was malicious. You see what I'm saying? Like, I felt like maybe she didn't know what she wanted, or maybe she wanted both of them. But the two of them really are at home with each other. That's kind of like how I'm interpreting the triangle here.
I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying about the way these characters are drawn in the film, because you could look at this film and you could watch it again and you could have a completely different reaction to all the different things that are going on. You could rewatch the film and you could have a completely different opinion of Art, let's say, or Patrick or whatever else. And I think that the genius thing that the script does and that the performances take you through in this film is that at each point in the film, each one of the core trio kind of looks like the protagonist of this film. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of following along with their story and you're kind of almost rooting for them in a way, like whatever's going on at that different point in the story. But then you see them from a different perspective at a different point in the film. Like, you see at the beginning of the movie, you see Patrick show up and he's sleeping in his car. He's broke. He's, you know, just kind of this gruff, whatever, down on his luck sort of person. And basically, one of the things I clocked right away at the beginning of the movie, basically for I can't even remember how long it is in the movie, Art doesn't speak. Art doesn't say anything. It's all his team. It's all Tashi. It's all everybody else around them all speaking for him.
I recognize that too. Yeah.
And he says nothing. So it's this fascinating way that you get these snapshots of all these different characters. To kind of circle back to your question, like my interpretation, like, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know. And it's exciting that I don't really know, because at any given time, you could ask me tomorrow, I could write you a thesis about how Patrick was like the master manipulator in this whole scenario. And then like the next time after that, I could write you it's Tashi. And then the next time after that, I could write you that it's Art,
right?
And all these different things and how there need to be loved and their need to kind of seek approval from Tashi, how that drives them and drives the wedge between them and all those kinds of things. It's so fascinating the way that these characters are drawn. They don't feel like movie characters to me. And what I mean by that is they feel like real people with real problems. Mm-hmm. Like, real life is complicated. Like, real life, there's a lot. Like, you have to deal with it. I'm sure I have to deal with it. Like, everybody's got a lot like of stuff to deal with and a lot of different things that have kind of put us on the pathway to becoming these people that we are. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just at some point, I just disassociated myself from trying to figure out whose side I was on. To go back to our Civil War review, right? Like, I tried to kind of disassociate myself from whose side I was on and just be like, these are all in some ways good people and in some ways toxic people who in some ways are dependent on each other, but in other ways are harmful to each other.
Right.
You know, so I really, really, really love how complex and how complicated all these characters are.
Yeah.
Because I could watch this movie tomorrow and I could have a completely different takeaway, I feel. And it's not every movie that you get that kind of thing, right?
Sure. And there were a lot of different layers with each character too. Like, none of those three characters were like simple. You know what I mean? They weren't like black and white, like cut and dry, you know. There, and I like that they were very multi-layered like that. Like, I'm thinking of how Art had this crush and desire on Tashi since the moment he saw her and ends up marrying her, right? Which you would think is like a dream life, and he's a tennis pro and he's obviously very successful, and they have that bit in there where they're doing the ad together for like Aston Martin or something like that. And it's obviously making a lot of money and they're rich and whatever. But
his face is on tennis rackets. He's like,
right, super right.
Famous. Yeah.
But also Luca incorporates that layer for his character where he's never beaten Patrick. Right.
Yep.
And even though that's his dude and that's his best friend, they grew up together and they taught each other how to play and made each other better. He's never beaten him like in a professional sense, like in, you know, and anything that would actually matter. So that always sticks with him until that final match that we keep, you know, going back to. So that's a different layer for that character. So even though he has all this stuff, that's the one thing he doesn't have is a victory over Patrick. And then obviously it's pretty obvious what Patrick's dealing with is that he doesn't have the life that Art has. So that kind of, he's being hit with that. Tashi is an interesting character to me, and what I wanted to hear what you had to say, but in the last act of the movie, I felt like, unfortunately, her character took a little bit of a back seat the way she was written, you know, and she had that kind of where she stepped out on Art in that one scene and went to meet Patrick, but I think that sat with me a little bit better after the fact, but as it was happening, I was like, ah. Because then you have that scene where she comes back and she looks in on and trying to find out where Art is, and he's laying with her daughter. You know, and it's a beautiful dad moment. He's putting her to bed and it's kind of on the nose or whatever. I don't know. I felt like she was a very strong, I don't want to use the word manipulative. That's not really the word I'm trying. That's not what I'm trying to say. But she was very much in charge, I felt like, even after her injury and stuff, of kind of taking hold of her life and really taking hold of Art's career. But then the last act of the film, there was a lot of things written in there that made her kind of unfavorable to the viewer, I felt like. And I don't know why we had to go that route for her. And then at the end, she's really just sitting in the audience and you don't know who she's pulling for, really. I mean, you really don't, which is a beautiful thing, kind of like what you're saying. And I'm kind of glad I don't really know because she had just, you know, had the night with Patrick and, you know, obviously has something for him, whether she wants to admit it or not. But she's married to Art, so she obviously cares about him as well. And she's in charge of his career and success and all that. So, I don't know. What do you think about Tashi's arc in this movie? I guess what I'm saying is I didn't like kind of the ending of her arc. I felt like it was maybe going somewhere else.
I'm gonna be pitching a lot of questions back at you. I think I'm serving, like, we're playing tennis right now and I'm smacking the ball back at you. But, like, I don't know what your expectation was watching that character, because when I watched that character, like, way before, and I mean, so this movie plays around chronologically a lot. It hops all over the place if you put it chronologically, like, she steps out on art a lot with Patrick. Basically, whenever Patrick makes his way back into their lives,
yeah,
like, she ends up finding her way to Patrick. And there's a hint of that, because he confronts her somewhere like in the middle of the movie and says, I want you to be my coach.
Right.
And then she's like, not a chance, I'd never be your coach, whatever. And then, like, you know, he hands her his number and is like, just in case you think about wanting to do the coach thing or whatever. And she takes the number and she doesn't throw it away.
Right.
Like, she doesn't get rid of it. And like, right there, I don't. Here's the thing.
Zendaya, I mean, do you see her as an antagonistic character, though? That's what I'm trying to get.
No, okay. Because I don't see. But well, at some point in the at different points in the movie, each of these characters is a protagonist or an antagonist, and I think that that's its genius. I think that at times in this movie, I think Patrick's the antagonist. I think at times in this movie, Art's the antagonist. So I think it's deliberately drawn that way so that you have to think, and that you have to, you can't just color black and white and just say, oh, this person's the bad person. No, this person's the good person.
I agree with whatever. That. And I think the movie does a good job of that. I agree with you, but I think Patrick and Art's through line is their want for Tashi. But Tashi is the beacon on a mountaintop, right? She kind of stands alone from the two of them because they pursued her initially, and arguably for 13 years they pursued her. So I guess, I don't know, I think Tashi is a central focus in this movie, and there were times when I loved her and there were times when I hated her. There were times when I was afraid of her. There was times when I was turned on by her. Like, and I think that's kind of what you're saying too, is that she's kind of all over these characters are all over the place. I know that you're saying you don't know. I get that you're saying that, but I'm trying to get something out of you if you had to go one way or the other, because with her character specifically.
But not knowing is knowing. You understand my say, like, not knowing is still knowing something about these characters.
Right. But let me finish though. But I think that there's a clear purpose for us to contemplate whether she was purposefully doing any of these things, like on a malicious scale, like a malevolent scale, like where, like, I'm going to play these guys. Because she starts out the movie in that hotel room on that first night by saying, I'm not a homewrecker. You know, she knows, like, these dudes are basically each other's, like, you know, they're locked in. So if I get in the middle of this, that might fuck them up. I mean, she knows that. And that was 13 years prior to the ending of the film. So I don't know. I guess it's fascinating to, like, contemplate, like, did she know what she was doing here? Was she playing tennis? So now that she's injured, this is her way of getting that rush of playing tennis, where she's playing these two dudes to see how this match kind of ends up. And I just don't know. I don't, which I guess is the beauty of it, but I just don't know.
I guess that's that. The great thing about this film is when I say I don't know, that's an answer to the question, because I think there's just a clear argument. This is Total Recall to me, G. Mm. Was he dreaming the whole time, or was he really a secret agent on Mars? Like, that's what I love about this. Was she really manipulating them both the whole time?
Right.
There's a clear cut argument you could make in the film that because she got injured, she used Art and his trajectory to still achieve the fame that she wanted herself as a tennis prodigy,
right,
and everything. That argument's clearly in the film, but then you can also very clearly paint the argument that Tashi doesn't put herself on this pedestal. They do. They're the ones that constantly are putting her in this position, and she just goes along for the ride. So I don't think there's a clear-cut answer to that, and that's why I love this movie as much as I do. That's why this movie is as good as it is, because it doesn't tell you definitively. Like I said, the great thing about it is each of them is the antagonist and the protagonist, back and forth. Think about it in terms of tennis. Maybe it shouldn't be a different sport. Maybe tennis is vital to the screenplay in the fact that it's a constant serve back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes this person is down, you know, 40 love or whatever. And you know, sometimes it's going down to the wire, you know, back and forth with the volley. Like, I love how complex and how complicated these characters are.
The last 15 to 20 minutes or so was exhilarating cinema. I mean, with the score in place, especially, and
that's the question I wanted to ask. Actually, that was another question that we got from Brad, from Brad, who said, besides The Social Network, what has been Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross's best film score?
I think this might
and
be
I
it.
I do love their score in The Social Network too, but I'm going to agree with you. I think this actually might be it. This score is
so
incredible.
Good, I mean, there's no way you would have told me that anybody, even Reznor Ross, would have been able to capture the essence of not only tennis and kind of the exciting back and forth of that game, but also like the sexiness and like kind of the kind of hip youthfulness of this movie too. Because,
well, let me give you a taste of this too, because you know this is a 2-hour and 11-minute movie, so it's over 2 hours long, and it's a tennis movie. You know, ultimately, at the end of the day, and I want to get into a couple other things, you know, before we ramp up on the movie, but there are different periods of time in this film where I felt like it might start to lull a little bit. And then all of a sudden, when you felt like it was about to lull, it was like, boom, doom, doom, doom,
yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. Like all of a sudden that score kicked in and that score, it's genius in the way that it just kind of immediately brings you back into the film and brings you right back along for the ride. So you're immediately invested again. Like, even if you find yourself slipping a little bit, and I'm like, here's the thing. By the time you get to like the umpteenth tennis hit, like whatever, like they have characters, they have wide views of the court, so you can see both characters. They have the camera shooting directly at one person and how many balls fly at the screen where you're just like, woo, Jesus.
They had ball point of view on a few of them too.
No, terrible. Utterly terrible.
I thought you were going to mention
the first person point of view
below ground one where it was like looking up through the clear ground.
The below ground one I didn't mind. The below ground one I thought was artistic. I liked that one, but I really hated, there was a first person one where it was like the camera was the character swinging the tennis racket. That I hated. And I hated the ball point of view.
Yeah, I
hated the ball point of view too. That was terrible. Like,
they were weird.
Like, it really felt like it got toward the end of the movie and Luca was just like, Jesus, how many more ways can I shoot tennis?
How else can I show this? Yeah, that makes sense.
That's what it felt like to me. It was just like, how many more ways can we think of to shoot tennis? Well, I'll make the camera the ball. Sure.
Dude. So they're having this like neck and neck battle in the final set, and it's the tiebreak set or whatever. And it's getting down to the last few serves and to decide who wins. There's a scene early on in the movie in one of the flashbacks where Patrick, you know, he won her phone number, right? So he took her out. And Art says, you know, I don't want you to tell me if you fucked her. I just give me a sign. And they come up with this thing where, because they both have tics in their serves, like different things they do. And
Patrick's is always like that, like behind the head thing. Yeah.
And Art places the ball in the like center of the racket, right?
In the neck of the racket. Yeah.
The neck of it. Yeah. Before he does it. And so Art says, okay, if you did, then just do that, you know, just serve like me basically. So he does. And so they both know, okay, he had sex with her. So 13 years later, they're having this match and it's getting down to the fucking end, bro. Like we're down to the last like serve or two, depending on what happens. And Patrick does that again. And this is after, you know, Zendaya called him up and they met out at his car. Dude, that was like, I was like, no, he didn't. That was the coldest shit I've ever seen. Like, he's just like, yeah, I fucked your wife last night, you know, in the middle of the match, basically. And then it didn't drag because it was a very, like, exhilarating moment and kind of surprising moment. But I felt like they held on Art's reaction forever. Did you not? It like went to slow motion and like he was just so focused on finding that out before. And I think he even got the time penalty or whatever, you know, because I think you have to serve within a minute or they give you a time penalty.
So Patrick got a time penalty because obviously, like, as you reach the climax of this movie, all the things that happened with Tashi are weighing on Patrick and everything as they play this match out. Mm-hmm. And he gets a time delay. And then let me tell you, like, it's like this movie was probably between a 6 and a 7 for me. Before that moment where they call back to that initial thing.
Yeah,
where
dude.
As soon as I see that, I'm just like, know, like, because it immediately brings all the emotion that these characters have gone through the whole runtime of this movie to the fore in this moment, in that game, in that serve, in that everything. It immediately brings all that emotion of everything that's happened to them rushing to that moment. And I, dude, like, so much of it is so good because
I'm with you.
There's no dialogue. Like, it's just literally, you're just watching these characters react to this stuff. And, like, we all know how great Zendaya is. Like, let me just, again, say how good Zendaya is in this movie. But that's not to take away from Josh O'Connor and Mike Faced. Incredible performances, dude. Like, I was like, but when he did that and, like, he gets that little grin on his face and then he gets a penalty for audible cursing, which I guess is a thing in tennis. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then, like, just, I mean, just the,
because because Art looks over at her and of course she doesn't know the inside thing. She doesn't know the tell.
No. So
she doesn't know what's happening. And when he tells him that by doing that, and then Art kind of looks over at her for some kind of explanation, and she's, and you can see her character going, what's going on? Like, why are they looking at me? And then that's when the move, that's why I said, like, the next 15 minutes was basically the match, but maybe there may have been a flashback or two mixed in there, but, like,
no, I mean, dude, that's like the last 2 minutes of the movie. That's like the end.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
That's like right at the end.
That's like right when they go for the,
it's so, like, I mean, in terms of film endings, like, you want to talk about, like film endings that are going to stick with you for a while. Like, just that whole sequence of events, just like him holding the ball up and giving him that tell of, like, yeah, I slept with your wife, and, like, just Art's reaction to it, that long shot of it. And then finally he just has that reaction where he's like, fuck this, or something like that, whatever he says. And then they go back into the back and forth and in more of that intensity.
Because after they both get the penalties or whatever, Art basically surrenders that last serve and he lets him get, remember, he just hit it underhanded, like, really easily. Yep. And he got the point so that they could go to a tie break. And then they basically played their guts out in the end. Yep. And she's watching it. And there's that scene of her, like, white knuckle clenching her fist together as she's watching it, because she doesn't know the outcome is going to be either, because they're both playing at the top of their game. And there's a couple times in the movie where she says, I just want to see some good fucking tennis. Like, I just want you guys to play your best game, you know? And I feel like, and again, we can argue whether she manipulated it to that point or not, but that crowd that was there, and by default, us, the audience, are getting their best game. Like, they're playing each other at the top of the highest level that they could play each other.
Their emotional, the investment they have in the game, physically, emotionally, mentally, like, everything all comes to a head. I mean, that's an interesting perspective to say that, you know, she was able to pull the strings to that point to get it to,
yeah,
they're going to play the best tennis game of their lives and give her the best tennis game that she's ever, that she's ever won. I mean, it's interesting. Like I said, I love the different ways that you can look at all the different events that happen in this film and try to figure out everything. I don't even know how else to phrase that, really.
And she lives through tennis. And again, I think tennis is a larger, just kind of token for, you know, a larger point in the story, love, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, desire. But I mean, she mentions, like, you know, there's a couple characters that'll be like, you know, we're always talking about tennis, or all you guys do is talk about tennis. And she says, well, what else is there to talk about? You know, that's like the thing for her, you know what I mean? And for her to see the two men that arguably she's in love with play the game of their lives against each other, essentially for her, you know what I mean? Her character, Tashi, would find that the pinnacle of exhilaration, I would think, you know, so. Yeah. And it just culminates, man, with the score that we've been talking about and the fucking both of them kind of charging the net, because they get closer and closer and closer to the net as that match goes on, until eventually something's got to happen. The point's got to give. And it does. And like you said, we don't know which way the ball falls because they don't really show it. And it cuts to Zendaya just screaming, let's go. Like, because she's so fucking excited about what she's watching. And that's it. The fucking movie's over. I mean, it's a hard cut. It's fucking a mic drop. It is a mic drop of a final act in this movie. And I thought the character development and the relationship journey that we went on with these three characters leading up to that point was equally as enthralling for me. And that's what made this such a good film. I mean, the reason it gets an 8 is because of some of the weird choices with Tashi's character that I mentioned, and some of the really weird camera shots that you mentioned, which I happen to agree with you. They were just
it was super weird. Like, what the fuck is going on? It really felt like as they were getting in the third act of the movie, like, how many more ways could we shoot tennis?
You know what I thought when I was watching this too, and that's why I asked you about the sports movie. Did you see Creed 3 last year?
No, I didn't see that one.
So Michael B. Jordan directed that. It was his directorial debut. It was really good. I really liked it. But he did a lot of really weird things with a boxing perspective. And it kind of reminded me of that a little bit, too. Like, it was like, I didn't like them. I'm kind of with you. They didn't work for me. But I appreciate the fact that he tried something different that we've really never seen with a tennis movie. I mean,
there's a way. Let's be fair. Let's be fair to Guadagnino here. There's a way to shoot this movie where you just shoot all the tennis as bland and boring as possible, like just the same overhead shots that you see on TV. I know Dan will get mad because he doesn't like hockey movies so much because they're not shot realistically enough compared to the way that they look on television. But I think that in terms of this movie, if you're settling up for over 2 hours of tennis and it's all that same exact point of view, man, the tennis would get boring. So I understand the choice to do it. But at the end of the great thing about this movie is by the end of this movie, you don't care about the tennis. The tennis isn't even the point. It's the journey these characters have been on. And I mean, like I said, I mean, in terms of movie endings, gee, this is one of those that sticks with you.
It's a mic drop. It is a literal
mic
drop.
Way after you leave that cinema. Like, I mean, the ending of this movie instantly elevated it, probably 1.5, maybe even 2 points for me.
Yeah.
I was blown away by the ending of it. I was just like, dude, that's amazing.
And
I
love, so good.
Again, here's the thing. Like, I bet you anything, I guarantee you, I go online, there's probably people being like, well, who won? You know, who won? Blah, blah, blah. Right. What happened afterward? Like, that ain't the point, yo.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. We all did. She won.
She won. Anybody who went to see this movie won. That's true.
Yeah, Tashi won.
Sorry,
too.
Brad, you won too, buddy.
Yeah, Brad's. I don't know why he's hating on this thing before he even saw it, but that's Brad for you. All right, look. Challengers, an 8 from me, an 8 from Nick, gives it an 8 overall.
Good
from
stuff, man. This is. I will sign up to see this kind of movie all day, every day. This was an absolute treat.
Real quick, before we say goodbye to the folks this week, Nick, what do you think of Oscar chances here for Challengers? It's only April, and
it's April.
Yeah, I don't know.
Reznor Ross will get a score nomination because they're Reznor Ross.
They better.
I don't think it'll see a lot of love outside of that because it's not the right time of the year. This is the time of year where you dump stuff that's not awards consideration because it's so far removed from it, where this will never stick in people's minds like all the way at award season. Like at the end of this, this won't be anywhere near the conversation. I love it. Like, I really do love it. And I would love to see, like, even
Zendaya.
Zendaya is so good in this movie, dude. Like, so good.
Do you think
so
her performance
good.
Was better here or in Dune Part 2?
Better here, by far. She just,
I don't know, man.
It's not that she, look, she was by far the best part of Dune Part 2 for me, and you
she
know
was
that.
Really good, but man.
She had a lot more meat on the page to chew on with this character.
Oh, yeah, for
and
sure.
And I loved that. I'm a character guy, so I'm always going to go with the character movie in that sense.
I mean, she's got a hell of a year going, that's for sure.
She's good in this.
I would love to see her get nominated for this, but I'm kind of with you where I just feel like it might be too early and too many other things are going to come along. I mean, it's definitely an Oscar-worthy performance, though, in this movie. I feel like
the thing
she's
I
really,
love
really
about
good.
It, too, is like, I mean, like, God damn, she looks good. Like, I mean, like, you never for a second doubt like that these two would immediately be captivated by her.
100%.
Like, there's this constant recurring kind of line between her and Art where she's like, are you still in love with me or are you in love with me? It's like, well, who wouldn't be? And it's exactly. I mean, she's that good in this movie. I mean, she's everything, dude. She's
Nailed
so
it.
Good.
Nailed it.
Oh.
Well, we loved it, guys. Challengers, a high recommend from the P's. It's actually Nick's number one movie of the year so far. It probably sits in my top 5 or 10 for sure. I really, really like this film. So 8 from both of us. Nick, next week, we hope the streak continues because we're going to be going to see Ryan Gosling in his new stunt homage called The Fall Guy with Miss Emily Blunt as well. I'm really looking forward to that one too. So I hope it pays off for us. We'll be checking that one out in theaters. And then I think we got Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes coming up after that. So we should hopefully have a good run here. Fingers crossed that Zendaya served to us, and it's our job to just volley back and forth and get these points, man. What do you think?
This is one of those, I mean, this is just one of those movies where if you love character ambiguity and you love character complexity, where it's not going to give you all the answers and you're going to draw your own conclusions and you're going to think about this one after you leave the theater. I mean, this is just an absolute bang out. Get to the theaters and see this one. Give movies like this a chance. Don't go see garbage like Dune Part 2, even though Zendaya's in that. Get Zendaya paid. I mean, by any means necessary, get her paid. But, I mean, come on.
All right. We love it. We love Zendaya. Go see Challengers. Nick, until next week, we will talk about Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt, another one who's not difficult on the eyes. I'm talking about Ryan Gosling, by the way. But Emily Blunt's pretty hot, too.
So Gosling's, like, infinitely charming. Like, I mean, his yeah. charm has, like, increases, like, a hundredfold every year.
So good.
I mean, yeah. The trailers have his kind of trademark, like, Ryan Gosling funny action humor right. thing all over it. So, like, I mean, it looks like it's going to be funny. I just hope it's as fun as it looks.
Yeah, me too.
And it's not like a really just dumpster fire disaster like Argyle was. I don't think it will be, but
My wife and myself and my son Logan are all going to see that on Friday night. We got a babysitter for the little one, so we're going to go check out The Fall Guy. And Logan's excited for it too, so it'll be a family affair. And then we'll get together on next week and discuss it. Nick, until then, I love you, brother. And as we told everyone at the top of the show, look forward to the movie drafts. They're coming up. Our first one will be in the month of May. I'm really excited for that. So stay tuned for all the details on that, guys. But we will be back next week to discuss The Fall Guy. Nick, have yourself a good week out there, buddy. Be careful. Be safe.
Peace.